It's funny, I've become so stingy with my interviews, but I love doing it with you, mainly because I grew up with you, and it's just more intelligent and more fun.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends. Hot button issues. Best-selling author. New York Daily News columnist. Compelling. The Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Our guest today is, to me, a truly unique figure in American sports. Not just the NBA, but American sports. There have been other great executives in NBA history, Red Auerbach and Jerry Krause, who we just lost, who put together the great Chicago Bulls teams. But none of them ever had the playing career that Jerry West did. He is one of the great figures in the history of the sport. He played in the NBA Finals 9 times. You go to his page in the record books, and it gives off a beam of light. 27 points a game for his career, 9 trips to the finals, 6.7 assists a game, 5.8 rebounds. And then after he stopped playing, he took charge of the Lakers. They won 6 titles after that. And his old adversary, Bill Russell, once said about Joe Morgan, his baseball-playing friend from Oakland, "Isn't it funny how good teams seem to follow Joe around?" Well, it should surprise no one that Jerry is now an executive board member with, the Golden State Warriors. I could go on and on, but then I'm wasting time from when I'd be talking to him. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Mike, thank you so much for having me.
You know, the one thing I wanted to start with today, and it's become part of your legend, and you always joke that it wasn't a 2-minute session watching Kobe Bryant when he was a kid. Talk about that day that he played 1-1 against Michael Cooper, and you'd seen enough after about 10 minutes.
Well, Mike, you know, I think every once in a while, because, you know, obviously the draft is the lifeblood of any organization. And, you know, sometimes unique players come along. And frankly, I think some of them are very easily identified. And at that point in time, it really wasn't in vogue to draft these young kids who really take, frankly, a period of time to develop into being competent NBA players. And more likely, some of them are not going to make it. And when you draft high, I think people always say, well, we're going to get a star. How many stars are there in the draft, regardless of who they are? There's very few. And when I had a chance to work him out, and Arne Tellem, who represented Kobe at that time, he wanted me to take a look at him. So we worked him out with a couple of other kids, and he was head and shoulders above them, and he was 17 years old. And he was almost, you know, people use all kind of different words, but he was a prodigy. There's no question he was. But the thing that was really unique about him and is just how much you could see the joy he had for the game. But the thing that, forget, a lot of people have joy for playing the game, but no one that we had seen work out personally had ever had that kind of skill level. And as I say, it was not in vogue to draft him. We had, frankly, a bigger prize in mind at that point in time, and that was try to get Shaquille O'Neal to change team from the Orlando Magic as a free agent. And there was a bunch of free agents out there. And for us to get to a point in time that, you know, that we were going to try to achieve that, we decided, well, let's take another look at Kobe Bryant. So we brought Michael Cooper in, who'd been retired for a year, and he was one of the best defensive players in the league, and he and Kobe were playing one-on-one basketball. Yeah. And I said, it wasn't 10 minutes. I said, 5 minutes. I said, I don't want to watch any more of this. I said, he's just too damn good. And but it was, frankly, an easy call. I really honestly thought that he was the best player in the draft. I didn't think there was anyone close to him in a talent standpoint. But more importantly, the inner drive was something that you rarely see in a player of that age. So we had a desire to try to acquire him. And we were going to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, Mike. And that is to clear enough space off of our salary cap so that we really could be in a position to sign Shaquille O'Neal. When we're finally able to get Charlotte to take him for a very good player in Vlade Divac, everyone think that trade was one-sided. It wasn't one-sided at that point in time. Charlotte probably got the best of it, to be honest with you, but Kobe's career, the extent of it, for as many years he played, everyone's going to look back and say, well, that was one of the one of the great trades or worst trades that you'd ever want to see. I don't look at it like that. A trade is not designed to hurt a team. Trades are supposed to be equal. And I think today when you deal with a lot of people in this league, and there was a few of them that I had to deal with prominently then that always would call up, and one person in particular, we need this player off your team. Yeah. And I'm saying to myself, well, that's pretty arrogant to say we need this player off your team. Well, we need this player off your team. Well, he's not available. This one's not available. So it was really a uniquely different time. And obviously we got a player that I told Jerry Buss, the late Jerry Buss, who owned the Lakers. I said, we got the best player in the draft. I said, he's not going to prove it right away because he's young and, he didn't really know how to – play the professional game at that point in time, and it worked out for us. Again, it was a stroke of good fortune because we got a player we wanted, knowing full well he was talented in Kobe Bryant. But we really got the grand prize of everyone during free agency that year in acquiring Shaquille O'Neal.
We're talking to the great Jerry West, and the old jazz man Dizzy Gillespie once said, the professional is the guy who can do it again. You had already constructed one championship team in Los Angeles, and at that point, what's the challenge of doing it again? And I think you told me one time that the whole Shaq thing was as stressful a negotiation as you ever had in your life.
Well, it was, and I actually had to go in the hospital. I was exhausted. It was extraordinary. It was really difficult because at that point in time, you really couldn't interact. They had a lockout year, and he was playing on the Olympic Games, and all of a sudden we were able to talk to him. And I had never talked to him in person, Mike. And we started communicating over the phone, and we seemed to have a real good rapport. And I would never be derogatory about any other team in this league, never. And I just told him I thought we were better positioned to win a championship than Orlando. I said we had better pieces, and he was a missing piece. And I did mention to him that we have a young player here that will help him get there in another year or two. And but it's ironic you bring his name up because Friday night here they're going to honor him with a statue outside of the arena downtown, and I'm going to be a part of that. And I'm going to say very little except he was probably the most fun player I've ever been around. I loved his personality. And with him, what you see is what you get. And he doesn't change. He's a big teddy bear and one of the most dominating players I've ever seen. You could see the fear in other players' eyes when he was really into it, and when there was something other than a regular season game, oh my gosh, you knew you had a huge advantage at that position. And it was just fun for me to know him personally. I admired him so much. He was like, I felt like he was one of my kids. I really did. And he was fun. He brought joy. Some of the things he did in Los Angeles, I'll never forget. He had this big motorcycle, and this huge man on this motorcycle driving around in the freeways of Los Angeles. And obviously that's not something that's in a contract, okay? You're not supposed to do stuff like that. And people would see him on a freeway honk, and here are this gigantic man. And his involvement with the with the police community, our law enforcement groups, was something really truly unique. But I just loved him as a person, and I will cherish every moment I had a chance to spend with him.
I've been lucky enough to talk to Jerry West many times over the years. And one of the things we've talked about, Jerry, is in this gotta have a ring mentality, that there's all sorts of ways to measure champions in sports. And your career, to me, is a great indication. You said to me one time that the time you won the title, you didn't feel that you played particularly well. And then there was another time when Frank Selvey's shot doesn't fall. And there's another time when Elgin is hurt. And the thing I've always loved about you is you never let your record in the finals come anywhere near defining you as a basketball player.
Well, Mike, you know, I have to look and back at the people who won a lot of championships, okay? And, you know, and Michael Jordan, who I so admire, he won 6 championships. And in Chicago, Jerry Krause, who worked for us at one time, who was maligned by a lot of people, he was a great guy. And it just kills me to see some of the responses that are out there when I know the same people were criticizing him personally upon his death. But he was a great guy. And I just love the fact that here was a person who flew under the radar, but yet he had accomplished something an awful lot. And I see a lot of players walking around with championship rings, okay? And to me, right place to right time. I've often wondered, how many championships would Kobe Bryant have won if he hadn't had Shaquille O'Neal there? How many championships would Michael Jordan if he didn't have all the help that was brought for him?
Yep.
And I have great admiration for those two people, obviously. I mean, two of my favorite players, Michael, I think, is the greatest player I've ever seen because he played both ends of the court better than anyone. But again, timing. I see players have won multiple championships and don't even get in a game. Does that make him great players? No. Two of the greatest players we ever had in a game, Karl Malone and John Stockton, never won a championship. And trust me, if they had been playing with the right people, they would have won championships. So I think in many ways it's overrated, but also it's a great sense of accomplishment for the organizations and for the players there. This does not happen because you have a great coach. It happens because you have people that can acquire the talent and assemble a team that gives a great coach a chance to win. You win with talent in this league, period. If you don't have the talent, you're not going to win. It's really simple.
We'll have more with Jerry West, but first this from Geico. Listen, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning. Pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's add, save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it may just be the most rewarding to-do you do today. What was it like to finally play with Wilt at the point in your career when he came to Los Angeles? Because that must have felt like there had to be a part of you feeling like it was going to be Christmas every day.
Not really. You know, I think at that point in time, Elgin, myself, and him were we're getting toward the end of our careers, okay? We all had to change. And Elgin had had a couple of really a devastating knee injury. And it was really ironic because we just, honestly, it was so new to play with someone like him. And it was a different transition for, I think, particularly a little bit for Elgin, because he was the guy that was really our primary scorer. I scored from a secondary manner. And Elgin and I used to average 30 a game every year. And we both had to adjust our games as we got older. And when we got Wilt, I think we all had to adjust our games. But it was for me, I didn't know him before, but once Elgin retired, he and I would spend a lot of time together after games, before games. We'd have dinner in the room together a lot. And I got to know him personally. And in many ways, you know, he kind of was one of those unique people who honestly didn't feel like he got enough credit. I used to tell him all the time, "Are you kidding me?" I said, "You're amazing." I said, "You know, for your size and some of the things you can do and how you've dominated this league," I said, I tell him all the time. And he really felt he was getting slighted because of his size, okay? And I try to reassure him that that wasn't the case. But I enjoyed a long relationship with him. I knew when to approach him. I knew when not to approach him. But he was, I enjoyed him, okay? And the greatest teammate I ever had in my life was Elgin Baylor. He was, I loved him so much as a player, but as a person, he was impeccable. And I used to feel like a stalker when he was around when I, my first couple of years. It was really amazing to me. I'd watch everything he would do, and I'd say to myself, "Can I do that?" And I said, "Maybe I can't do that, okay?" But I learned a lot from him about how professional he was and what a great person. He was more than a great person. He was a great teammate. And when he retired and we win a championship the year he retired, it was probably in many ways one of the saddest days of my life, because I can remember us sitting in the locker room after so many defeats in the finals that I think he probably felt like I did, that you couldn't be lower. And I don't know, I've never really talked to him more about that, but after a while, I felt like we were letting the city of Los Angeles down, who had, you know, rallied behind us. And those were difficult times, Mike, really difficult times. And, you know, to somebody says, "Well, at least you have one on your resume." Well, it's always probably been a low point in my life that we couldn't have won more in the playoffs, and it always seemed like I played better in the playoffs. The more pressure, the more I felt compelled to try to play better and compete harder, if you can compete harder. But it was, I can tell you, it has lived with me for a long time, the losing.
We're talking to the great Jerry West, and I write about this constantly, and people think I'm stuck on it. When John Elway, who was an immortal player, won a Super Bowl with the Broncos as an executive, I wrote a column, and I said that Elway is the guy that everybody wants, and the guy everybody wants is Jerry West. And Jerry, what's kind of forgotten on your resume is, even though you didn't win a title as a coach, you were in the playoffs three times with the Lakers. This is and went to the Western Conference Finals once. And I was wondering, do you buy into the fact that sometimes it's difficult for somebody who was as great a player as you were to become a successful coach just because you set the standard so high for yourself?
You know what? That's a great question, Mike, and I've been asked that a couple of times in my life, and I think the one thing that people don't understand is that maybe the people who play the game at a higher level, they demand so much more of themselves. It seems like they're more committed, but it also they have more ability. And today, I rarely think you would see this because, you know, there's so much money made in this game today. Oh, my gosh. I just don't think you see a player. Most players, if they play 10 years and they play this game at a high level, they would never have to work a game again in their lives. And my best guess is they would not want to be involved with something that's so grueling and so taxing physically, but more importantly, mentally. It is really something that you have to have some inner resolve to play this game at a high level. And just think of the pressure on the players that people come to see play. They pay to see play. They pay to see a high level of performance. The pressure on them is enormous. And so they want to get away from that. But I think if you had the right personality, I think some of them could be tremendous coaches. And for me, I felt like I almost abused players verbally. And I apologize for two or three players that I coach, because I saw something in them that if they could have just concentrated a little bit better and be a little bit more protective of the basketball and just learn how you have to change. This game is a fast game, but players who see the game in slow motion and who have great ability, those are the ones who stand out and leave their mark in the record books. They leave their mark in writers' minds, and particularly in fans' minds. Some players can't be great. They can be good, and they can be 10-year professionals, but they can't play the game the way these great guys do because they don't see the game the same way. They don't have the same mental capabilities in terms of being able to play hard every night. And for me, that's one of the things I could not understand. How can you not come out here and compete hard every night? I can honestly say that during my career, even an exhibition game, if we lost, I was really irritated if we lost. And some people, you know, heck, we don't even play exhibition games. We don't even play people half the time. Right. Because of rest. And I do understand with all the new things that we have internally with our trainers and all the training devices and all the ways that you measure players, whether they're physically tired or exhausted. I can understand coaches not wanting to do that, but I just don't think if I were a fan who paid a lot of money to come out and see our stars, I think it's something the commissioner has voiced his disapproval of. And we can cheat our fans, okay? We cannot. And we got a great game. It's fun. It's an event now. And if you go to any other games, I don't think there's the only thing I can think with as much electricity in the air is an incredible boxing match by two great boxers. Okay, I used to watch boxing all the time when I was a kid, and you could just feel the adrenaline in yourself if were a fan.
Totally. Yeah, you can't Jerry. You can't describe it to somebody who's never been to a big fight what it's like to be in the arena.
Right, exactly right, and that's what to me that there's certain matchups that. When I played against Oscar Robertson, okay, oh my gosh, I was completely, even though I felt every night I was up, there was more inside of me then. And he and I are still very friendly, and I admire him so much. And I've always loved him as a competitor and played with him on the Olympic teams. But I wonder if he felt the same way after a couple of years when we were playing against each other. I've never asked him that question, but I would tell you that there was a lot of extra adrenaline running when I was playing against him.
We'll have more with Jerry West, but first this. Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them, it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. I've never asked you this in all the conversations we've had over the years. What kind of relationship did you have with Bill Russell?
I loved him personally, and I had such respect for him there is one picture of him standing with his hands on his hip, and of course he had this beard, and he looked like a regal person. And I know you've seen the picture before.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you mean.
He looked like someone looking over a king, looking over his domain. Yeah. And I thought that was the best way to describe him. But the thing about him that made him really unique was he competed every night. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, people talk about the different eras of players, and certainly it's a different game today than when we played. I don't like to, you know, I'm not one of those older players who said, hey, look, you know, I would have liked to have played. I would have liked to have played in this sense, that the way the rules are relaxed, where you can carry the ball over the place, where you can walk every other time down the court, and as part of the European game, I guess, it would have been fun to be able to carry the ball over the place. And also the fouls that are called today. I've seen flagrant fouls called where a guy goes driving, he tries to catch himself, he gets knocked off balance, and he hits somebody on the shoulder and close to the head, and it's a flagrant foul. I don't know how in the world that you legislate against a guy trying to protect himself. And, you know, I see these things happening, and obviously I'm still involved in the league, and I talked to the league about it. I talked to Kiki Vandeweghe, who's been a lifelong friend of mine, and it's just the new procedures to try to protect the players and their health. But the game then was dirty. It wasn't physical. It was really dirty. And to play today where you can't touch anyone, it's a foul, you can't hand check, I would have liked to have played under those kind of rules and also have grown up with all the ability for players to watch stuff on YouTube, watch all the training aids, go to these AAU camps. It would have been a tremendous bone to everyone to be able to do that at that point in time. But when you watch films of the older players, it looked like the Stone Ages, to be honest with you. And you watch the players today who handle the ball so beautifully and who are so athletic. There were a lot of athletic guys then. Dunking was showing off then.
Right.
And now you hear the announcer, well, he should have dunked that, right? There's sometimes you shouldn't dunk. You should try to finesse it in, okay? Because you know you're going to get a block. And the other way, you can really have a chance to make a three-point play. But everything has changed so much. And as I say, I admire the players today. A lot of the older players, of course, are envious of you know, some of the enormous amounts of money that are paid to players today who are average at best. It's just part of what was established years ago by the founders of the league, and also from some of us players who sat in a room in Boston in 1964 and refused to play in the All-Star game because they forgot to, because we wanted to be recognized as a union and have an opportunity to have some rights when there was no rights out there for players. And I would hope that all young players would appreciate that, how an owner told me you'll never play another game of basketball, and I'm about 25 years old, and I just loved it. And I guess I'm not going to play basketball anymore, I said to the late Robert Short. Elgin Baylor said the same thing. And I'm just hopeful that the players today understand that people do care about, the older players care about them, they want them to do well. But just respect the game, and every night you go out there, play to your utmost level, because the fans who are paying to see it will really appreciate it when they walk out of the game.
We'll have more with Jerry West, but first this from Geico. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but stay with me. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. The company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. Geico didn't come along just when they started doing these awesome television commercials. And anytime you need help, you speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of here. You know, Jerry, I would think when I look back over this extraordinary resume you have as a basketball man, I have to believe that one of the proudest accomplishments for you was going to Memphis and putting that team together and being executive of the year there after you left the Lakers.
Well, honestly, to be honest with you, I think one of the things that has always rankled me, if you're in one of the big cities and a team that has a lot of history, and you know, you always say, well, it's easy to work there, okay? It's really easy to work there because of the city that it's in and everything. And when I left here, I said, well, I said, I had to leave, okay? I just couldn't stay there anymore. There's no way. I'd had my fill. And what was interesting was that I always said that I wanted to work for the worst team in the league in the smallest market in the league. I thought it was the ultimate challenge that anyone in a position who's had some success with winning, and it didn't have to be winning championships. To me, it's the greatest test as a person. And life to me is about challenges and about goals. The way I grew up, life was a challenge for me. And the only thing I could do is to try to set some goals for myself, never tell anyone, this is what I would like to do. And when the late Mr. Heisley, who I had an unbelievably special relationship, came to me, I said to myself, oh my gosh. And we were talking, and he wanted me to do this. And I said, well, let me think about it. And about a week later, he and I talked again. I said, you know, Mike, I said, I would love to do this. I said, to me, this will be, excite me beyond words. It will create an energy and enthusiasm that you need to be successful in anything you're doing in your life. And with him, I told him, I said, I'll guarantee you one thing. I said, I'll guarantee in 3 years we're going to make the playoff. And that really sounded obnoxious and, and more importantly, braggadocious. And in our second year there, that team had only won 23 games in its I think in its existence, the most games they ever won. My first year, we won 28 games in Memphis, and horribly disappointed. But to me, there was a vision there that we were going to get better. In the next year, we won 50 games and made the playoffs.
Yep,
and I'm telling you, it was the proudest moment of my life.
Is that right? For real?
Absolutely the proudest moment of my life. I think the other one, proudest moment I had in my life was here in Los Angeles, and the second one would be Shaquille O'Neal, who I just love as a person, and Kobe Bryant, who loved who he is, had an incredible relationship with him for so many years, watching him grow up. That was the second most exciting thing in my life. And now, being involved with the Warriors, to see this franchise go from where it was not among the most favorable places to go to, I would say, probably maybe one of the most admired teams in the league. I'll guarantee the most fun team to watch, most unselfish. The people I work with up there have been incredible. And this team should be, every year for the next 4 years, if we can retain our four all-star players, it's going to be playing for a championship every year, I think.
All right. The 25-year-old Jerry West, no three-point line, and the 25-year-old Steph are having a game of horse. Who wins?
I refuse to answer that because I'm not lying. He would.
Okay. Jerry, now you have always had an extraordinary eye for talent, and you've also had a vision for how teams are supposed to look and fit together. When this young, and I got a son, one of my sons was a point guard, and he fell in love with Steph Curry when he was at Davidson. Did you think he was going to be this good?
Well, I knew, listen, I didn't have a chance to be around him at all, of course. I just watched him from a distance. You know, he was playing with a team where he and Monte Ellis, who was another very good player, they really didn't complement each other at all. And I thought one of the things that really changed the direction of this franchise is that when a determination was made internally to trade Monte Ellis and keep Steph, I thought that was the change of this franchise. And we got a center in Andrew Bogut who could really pass the ball. Andrew, as you're well aware, has had a terrible time with injuries.
Oh my God.
Which to me, it just seems almost like there's a curse on him because he's a very good player. And once that trade was made, our owner, they were tying Chris Mullin's uniform. And our owner gets up and he's going to say something regarding Chris. And then the crowd booed him. I called him the next day and I told him, I said, look, I said, this is what makes sports so raw at times. The criticism, the everyone thinking they're geniuses, and particularly the average fan who gets so enamored with certain players. I said, this is going to be the turning point in this franchise. I said, because we're going to see what Steph really is. And it was a thing that propelled his career to where he is today. And it showed, I think, the courage of our owner to allow the basketball staff to make that trade. And we see Steph Curry, who is kind of the idol of all these young kids. He looked like he's 10 years old. Out there playing this game, he plays it with joy, and then you look at this talent surrounding him. And we had a player there that was a better combination for him in Clay Thompson,
yep,
who we had drafted, and he's turned out to be a tremendous player himself. And you know, this team, we had a really, really poor spell right after the All-Star break, and also we lost Kevin. And we just did not seem to have energy or confidence. And all of a sudden, they've gotten it back. And we're beautiful to watch play. And we're very hopeful that Kevin's going to be around pretty soon. And to have a wild card like Kevin Durant around, oh, my God, what an amazing player he is, but a better person. We have the nicest group of kids ever. And they happen to be really talented. And Steve Kerr has been a really remarkable young coach. He's getting better. And we're going to be very dangerous going into the playoff, I'll say that.
What would have happened in Jerry West prime if Butch or one of your coaches had said, you know what, you look a little tired the other night, I'm going to sit you down. What would have happened then?
Probably been a fist fight because I was not going to sit down, period. No one was going to tell me when to play and not to play. I just loved the competition. And I would either gotten fined or I would have played, one of the two.
You know, I will say this again. There has never been anybody quite like, and not just because of the gentleman he's been from the time he came out of West Virginia, but there is nobody who has ever been an immortal as a player and then went on to become an immortal as an executive. Jerry West has done that in the same basketball lifetime. And if you know, there's no fairness in sports. There's no sports owes you one, but there's a wonderful form of justice, Jerry, that at this stage of your basketball life, you're now associated with a team like this. So I'm glad that, first of all, I'm glad I know you. And second of all, I'm glad that the basketball gods have smiled on you with this particular Golden State Warriors team.
Well, you know something, Mike, and I guess the last thought for me is that I'm really fortunate to be involved with maybe the best ownership group that I've ever been associated with. They have truly unique owners up there, and they had a vision of what they wanted to accomplish. And for them to want me involved, I was thrilled that they thought I could help make a difference. Whether or not that's the case, I don't know. But I am working with some wonderful people, and because there, we have so many more owners, and when you have a bunch of owners, you're aware that there can be different temperaments, different personalities. They're looking for something completely different from a player, from a team. There has been almost complete accord up there, except when we're trying to talk about acquiring players or making players. But the most healthy environment, when everyone is allowed to express their opinion and a correct decision is made, and there's been a lot of great decisions made up there. And it was so unlike working with Jerry Buss when I was here in Los Angeles. We had a very small staff and one owner. And to interact with him personally was probably one of the most fun things I've ever had to do. You know, he had expressed his opinion about players and everything, but ultimately he would let you make that final decision. And we didn't have that many people working, and he trusted me enough to do that. And it really made me feel great that he thought that I could be able to help him achieve what he wanted to do. And he was a genius away from the basketball part of it. You know, he started a thing called Prime Ticket today, which only someone who thought like him, the ticket pricing that he talked about, and he changed. He changed it from a basketball game to an event. He just had so many great ideas. But as I say, he was unique in a sense. He was an individual owner. And now I work for a conglomerate of people, and they've just been incredible to work with. I love how they treated me, knowing that I'm kind of an outlier because I don't always agree with everything they say. And I appreciate anyone who treats me nicely, okay? And because that's how I think I try to treat everyone in my life. I look back in my life and I feel this little kid from West Virginia who had a chance to live his dreams, and still at this age in my life, I do feel very viable. Frankly, I almost feel like I could run a team. I have that much energy. The only negative thing is that I worry about more about the players and team than I do myself and my health. And that's not good, of course. So I've been so blessed in my life to participate in a game I've loved and interact with so many incredible people. I met people in my life that I never thought I would meet. I've met players who I've so admired, got to know away from the game. I've been so fortunate to being able to live my dreams.
Well, I feel the exact same way about you. I've done this a long time, and I've made it clear over the years what big, pure, stupid fun it is for me to get to talk basketball with you. Thank you for indulging me again. I kept you longer than I said I was going to, and I promise you I won't circle back around for at least 3 more months to get you to do this again. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Mike, I appreciate it. I've always admired you so much and enjoyed your commentary, your wisdom, and thanks for all the nice things you said about me. I much appreciate it.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.